Good Friday. Today is July the 26th, and you're listening to My Farm. Well, today's theme, Christmas in July. No, we aren't celebrating Christmas, but those that raise Christmas trees are out working hard to make sure that they get the trees ready so you have that perfect tree when it comes November or December and you want to go select one. We're talking about the importance of shearing trees and other management techniques. We'll be back with the details after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
We're going to take some time this Friday morning, and of all things, we're going to talk about Christmas in July. Now, no, we aren't celebrating Christmas. We're talking about Christmas trees because, ironically, this is really the time when a lot of important management takes place, so those trees look just right in the fall, late fall, and into the winter as you go make your selections if you're going out to a Christmas tree farm, and it all comes down to proper shearing. Now, shearing is best done when the tree is sort of that new growth elongates but doesn't harden off. Typically, that's sort of in early to mid-July in this part of the world. Fir trees are a little bit more forgiving when they're sheared. Now, firs grown in Ohio include the Cannon fir, the Conkler fir, the Douglas fir, and occasionally even the Fraser firs. Firs in general can be pruned after that growth is elongated some, but in addition, spruce that are grown as Christmas trees in Ohio, which would be like your blue spruce, your Norway spruce, and your Black Hills spruce. That's a variety also with white spruce. Those need pruned. Shearing can be really as much an art as it is a science as people practice it and want to get better. One of the key things to keep in mind as Christmas tree farms shear those trees is the leader. Now, the saying out there is everybody wants to be a leader. Well, that's definitely the truth in Christmas trees. As a lot of times you'll see several of those upper branches trying to curve and grow straight up. There may be three or four competing to be what would be the leader of that tree. You need to, at this point, though, farmers say, select which one's going to be the most appropriate and then actually prune off or terminate those others. Another aspect of shearing is the taper. There are industry standards for correct taper of Christmas trees based on the species, and the National Christmas Tree Association has a lot of information about that. But the idea is to make that shapely, the type of shape you would expect to see when you would bring it into your home. Now, there are individual preferences of some customers. Some would like more of a wide bushy tree. Others want a tree that's maybe 10 foot tall but only 4 foot wide. And so for experienced Christmas tree growers, they sort of have an idea what some of their customers are looking for. So they'll maybe shear some of the different trees that will maybe meet those standards a little more closely than just what Mother Nature would do. In a nutshell, though, growing Christmas trees is more than just planting those seedlings and waiting 7 to 10 years for them to grow and then let people come and cut them down. There's weed control methods. There's fertilization, insect and disease control is a really big deal, and most time-consuming part is actually the mowing and shearing to keep those pruned and trimmed up. So next time you go out to pick out your Christmas tree, know that there was a lot of work done, even though it may be cold in the winter. It was awfully hot in the summer when they were going out trying to make sure you had that perfect Christmas tree that you could select. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at cropcoverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. We took time a couple weeks ago to talk about snakes in the backyard, something none of us like to see. Well, if you don't like snakes sneaking around your yard, an expert has some advice on ways to deter them. USDA's Gary Crawford has the story.
And now, here's a snake song from Tom T. Hall, a song that scaled the charts in 1975.
I don't like old Sneaky Snake. He laughs too much, you see. When he goes wiggling through the grass, it tickles his underneath.
Well, now Mr. Hall may not like sneaky snakes, but Kansas State University wildlife management specialist Drew Ricketts says they definitely perform an ecological service for us.
By, you know, eating rodents that might get into our houses and cause other problems that way, or by, you know, reducing insect abundance, or eating other snakes.
Ooh, now I like that one. But nonetheless, I and many others would rather those civic-minded snakes render their ecological services away from the house and in somebody else's yard if possible. On that score, Drew says it's almost impossible to exclude snakes from our yards and gardens, but we can make the area less inviting to snakes by what he calls habitat modification. Basically, find out what snakes like and then get rid of it. For example,
you know, lots of snakes like to live under rocks or use rocks for cover. So the more rocks that we have for landscaping or just existing in a yard, the more snake habitat that's out there. The challenge with that is a lot of the things that we do for pretty landscaping can provide snake habitat. So even like landscaping pavers or, you know, blocks of concrete that we might have out in a yard can provide that same sort of structure or cover for snakes.
But wait, there's more.
Even a firewood pile, piles of building materials like loose tin from roofs that have blown off, piles of lumber, open foundations underneath sheds, or when we have an open crawl space, that's also an area that a snake could get in underneath the house, or we could be providing structure underneath the shed and that sort of thing that's attracting snakes to the yard.
Likewise, piles of brush can attract snakes and even tall, thick, pretty landscaping plants.
You know, I'm not saying that everybody should remove all of the pretty landscaping from their yard, but for someone who is really concerned about snakes being in the yard, or if they have had a history of snakes being in the yard, all of those sorts of things could be attracting snakes to the yard.
And possibly attracting them into the house. Ugh. And we'll talk about that unnerving possibility next time. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Thanks, Gary. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great weekend.